Welcome to Conscious Living Radio 100.5 FM in Vancouver, Co-op Radio. I'm Tasha Sims here with...
It's Mark Caron.
And what a cool track. I could have listened to that whole thing. I'm really sad we had to fade it out. That's Shine, our very own Shine here, local musician and talented man of many talents. Right, Mark?
Shine is awesome. His music just takes me away. It's a journey that is just... leaves me speechless, and that doesn't happen very often, as you know.
And wanting to dance. Tonight,
well, speaking of which, you know, he's actually performing and being a big part of an event that's happening at St. James Hall. It's a cannabis ceremony with Stephen Gray and a bunch of Matthew Cosell, all of our great friends, on January 25th. And Shine and his friends are going to be a dance party and all sorts of things going on. So if you want to see Shine live in action, that's the time to do it.
Okay, that sounds pretty cool. Well, I hope you all had a awesome Christmas and holiday and Happy New Year. This, I have to say, this was the most relaxed I've ever been. And I love ritual. I love doing Christmas things, all those things that just are so meaningful. And for some reason this year, it was just non-attached. So much easier that way. We are talking tonight to Julia Mossbridge. She's a PhD, a futurist. She's trained in cognitive neuroscience, a fellow at the Institute of Noetic Sciences, and a visiting scholar at Northwestern University in the Department of Psychology. Dr. Mossbridge is the co-author of Transcendent Mind, one of the first academic books to examine paranormal experiences. It was published by the American Psychological Association in 2017. Research focus has been precognition and the possibility of time travel. Her book, The Premonition Code, The Science of Precognition, How Sensing the Future Can Change Your Life, documents the scientific, spiritual, and practical aspects of precognition. So we're going to be talking about that over the next hour and much, much more. So welcome to the show, Julia.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
Hi. So can we start with a little bit of personal info? Like, what drew you to this particular field of study?
Yeah, sure. Since I was a kid, I've been having dreams that I consider to be precognitive. Of course, it's very hard to test precognitive dreams in the wild, so to speak. You kind of have to set up an experiment to really to test people in that way. But my experience has been that I've been having dreams where detailed information about future events that seems to unfold, not always, but sometimes. And I've kept a dream journal since I was 12, and so I have many such instances of those events. And then, of course, in my daily life, waking precognitive experiences have happened too, which I call precognitive compulsions. So these things where you feel like you must do something, you don't know why, and then later you think, wow, I'm really glad I did that thing. So given that I'm of a scientific bent, I took these experiences and I had already developed an interest in the brain and the mind. And I thought, well, maybe I should start studying this very mysterious thing since I'm very interested in time and how time works. And so that's where I'm at.
Mm-hmm. And is the pathway to accessing this kind of information through the unconscious?
Can you ask the question in a different
way?
I'm not quite sure what you're getting at.
Yeah, no, I'm just thinking about how the conscious mind, which is, you know, the linear mind, the mind that is perceiving and looking out at the world, has a certain program that it's kind of like a lens that we're all looking through. Whereas the unconscious is when I think of mystery, when I think of the unknown, when I think of information that comes to you suddenly and you don't even know where it came from. That feels like it's coming, when I use the term unconscious, I'm meaning in that way. It's as if it just appears. You're not trying to answer a question. It just literally, there's the information. So that portal, the unconscious.
Okay, that'll make sense. But what was the...
So the question was, when you are having this download or the information about the future, is it coming through that portal, through the unconscious? Is that how we are receiving that kind of information?
Oh, right. Sorry, I didn't understand at first what you were getting at. Yeah, it's thought to be the case that for most people, everything's coming through the unconscious. So our conscious experience is presented to us by our unconscious minds. In other words, our unconscious minds are, it's another name for all the processes that we don't know about and we're trying to understand about as cognitive neuroscientists, but they're in charge of what we experience. And so, precognitive experiences are given to us by our conscious mind, but so is our experience of sitting here and listening to this show, right? In other words, the unconscious mind basically governs everything we do. So yes, precognitive experiences too.
Mm-hmm. So, all right, let's come at it from a different angle. How can you tell that you're receiving information that's future-based?
Yeah. Well, so I guess we kind of, here's my experience of what's going on in this conversation. I feel like we jumped right into all these really interesting questions, and it doesn't, I worry about the listeners not, I don't know who your listeners are. I don't know, where are they with, are they like right there, it just feels like we jumped into the middle of a conversation, and I feel like there's no context, and so I worry about the listeners.
Well, if you feel like supplying some context, you can, but I know that our listeners are pretty savvy, pretty conscious, pretty awake, and well-versed in many areas of understanding that's far beyond mainstream. It's not a mainstream audience. Go ahead, Mark.
Okay, great. That's super helpful.
Yeah. So what if we were to start with, you know, what is precognition, premonition, and the difference between intuition and the three of those?
Yeah, I think that might be a good place for many people to start, just so that you know where I'm coming from, and scientifically how it's generally thought of, at least from the context of the scientists that I hang out with. So that's great. So intuition is what I think of as an umbrella term for all the forms of getting information where we can't really trace what the pathway was. You know, many people feel that you can trace the pathway for some kind of logical information, although frankly, I don't think you can. But there's a belief out there that certain pieces of information, you say, well, I know why I thought this. It's because X and Y, and therefore Z. But then we have this thing called intuition, which is when we don't know what the X and Y were, but we got to Z. And we don't know how we did it. And I think that's kind of actually describes almost everything we do. But anyway, there is that idea out there. And one component of intuition is precognition, which is the scientific name for getting accurate information about future events that should, according to sort of a mainstream linear view of time, should not be predictable. And then premonition is a colloquial term for precognition. So premonition comes from the words pre, before, and monere, to warn. And as you can tell from those words, it suggests that premonition was a word that was originally meant to only describe instances of getting information about future events that was negative. So I had a premonition someone would die or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
But lately people use it as I had a premonition that I would win a raffle or something like that, right? So now it's become almost exactly the same thing as precognition. It doesn't matter a positive or negative event, it's getting the information about the future event. So in the book, we call it premonition code because more people have heard of, it's a mainstream book, more people have heard of premonition than precognition. And precognition is the scientific word. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, it certainly makes sense for myself. So what you're saying is there is also a science attached to being more intuitive and using your precognition. Is that kind of...
So there's a... Mm-hmm. Would you like to hear about that?
Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so intuition in general, there's a ton of science attached to that. And a lot of scientists who are interested in intuition are specifically not studying precognition. So they're studying how do people pick up subconscious cues about the environment and then turn that into a decision that they make, right, or a prediction that they make. But those cues are sensory cues that are unconscious. Like, you know, you hear thunder in the distance and some part of you is thinking about rain, but you don't recognize that you heard the thunder. That's the kind of intuition that a lot of scientists are studying, very few scientists are studying precognition, which is in which you have to study, you have to use a very specific experimental design to study, because what you need to do is rule out any kind of subconscious cues that are known. So any cues that are related to the five senses or logic or any kind of prediction based on past behavior. And you do experiments where you use random number generators to produce some kind of an event that is being predicted by the behavior or the physiology before the event. And those experiments have been going on for 40 years. And, part of why I'm involved in this research or why I wrote this book is I did a statistical meta-analysis that puts together 26 of these studies that specifically looked at physiology, so body changes, which I'm sure your audience has heard of Dean Radin's work and presentiment, this kind of work, and looked at the statistics of it, and the results showed that, in fact, as far as we can tell, there's definitely something going on that we don't understand in terms of the body preparing for future events that should be unpredictable according to mainstream science.
Maybe you could say a little bit more about that. I'm not sure our audience does know about that one.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, so, So, worth checking out, if you don't know, the Institute of Noetic Sciences in Petaluma, California. There's an author there, Dean Radin, who is a researcher. He's a collaborator of mine. And he started doing this work before I did. He was one of my mentors. And he is fairly famous for being the first person to recognize that if you create an experiment in which, let's say there's 25 images that you show someone on a computer screen, and let's say about half of them are like emotional images, like a picture of a person pointing a gun at you or a picture of a plane crash, like things that would kind of shake you up a little bit if you saw them. And then the other half are not emotional, like a picture of a sandwich or some shoes or mm-hmm. a sunset or something like that. And they're randomized. And what you do is you have a participant ask them if you can put electrodes on their skin so you can see how their skin conductance or sweat levels are changing over time. And then you can analyze that after showing them all 25 images in a random order, and you can randomize. Because it's randomized, you can look at the, say, 10-second period before each image is shown. And you could do statistics, and the statistics show you that the 10 seconds before people are about to see, for instance, a gun being pointed at them, their physiology is ramping up as if there's some kind of danger coming. Whereas 10 seconds before they're about to see a picture of a sunset, the physiology is not ramping up to the same extent. And this is on average over, a group of people. But it seems... it's consistent over 26 studies, at least. When I say consistent, I mean statistically, it's very hard to explain the results of these studies without saying that the body is sensing the future.
And so what does that tell you about time? Where does you personally, where are you kind of, what are your thoughts and percolations on time and space?
Yeah. So I've been thinking about time and reading about time since I was a kid, and I've been through lots of stages of my understanding in time, and I feel like sometimes I have less of a good opinion than I did when I was a kid. I have less of a strong opinion. Now I feel very unclear about time, and I think that's probably more similar to many people who think about time, is the more you think about it, the more completely
All I know is I want a DeLorean that travels through time.
I do too, I guess my sense is this. I start thinking, like, look, the deal is, when you start talking to physicists about time, so I've been talking to physicists and philosophers and neuroscientists about time, and they all have different kind of relationships to time, but when I talk to physicists, what I get is that just total confusion right now about time, completely different answers from different physicists, and they know it, and they talk about how the other ones are wrong, or they don't know if the other ones are wrong, but they feel this way. So some believe that time exists in the physical world, and some believe those are actually fundamental. So like Lee Smolin is a guy who says this, who thinks that time is fundamental. But others think it time doesn't exist at all in the physical world. It's completely a mental phenomenon, the flow of time. So an example of that would be Julian Barber. And then there's everyone in between. And then there's folks who think there's multiple dimensions of time. Mm-hmm. And I might be one of those people.
Mm-hmm. That it's all happening at once.
All I know is the time is now. Now is the only moment, and it comes and goes at every millisecond of time. Right?
Yeah, there's that. But then we can't deny the experience that we remember some things and we call what we remember the past, and we have a hard time remembering other things and we call what we have a hard time remembering the future or something that never happened, right? I mean, that's also true. So yeah, the time is now and the now is the only thing that exists, but we also have these other very human experiences of getting older and of not knowing what's going to happen in the future or thinking we do know what's going to happen in the future. And that all has to be explained in some kind of cohesive theory of time, and
Let me ask you this. Does it really have to be explained? Because if we just take a look at nature and appreciate it for exactly what it is, the here and the now and being present, does it really matter? Do we spend a lot of time wondering what time is just to take us out of our moments to understand something that we can't even put our fingers on?
Sure. I mean, you could also not try to explain it. Of course, you could always not try to explain something. My whole job is to try to.
Okay. But here's where I was coming from when I asked the initial question. It was based on the experiment you were talking about. So I was, trying to be as scientific as I possibly could because it's not my nature.
Yeah, okay.
It is so not my nature. I actually was thought I was keeping us there. And Mark, you took us out into the ozone. Okay, so I'm going to weave it right back. So these people's bodies are responding to a stimulus that they haven't seen yet. And that's where I started to think, okay, time. So how would you weave just that little, even that little piece? What would that tell you about, like, what are the possible explanations then? I'll ask it a different way.
Yeah.
For that phenomenon.
Yeah, okay.
Yep.
Yeah, possible explanations.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So also, I'm so unsatisfying, and I apologize. I know this is unsatisfying because people want me to know the answer, and of course I don't, right? So it's unsatisfying for everyone involved, and then for me it's unsatisfying because I can hardly put my lack of knowledge. The more I know, the less I know, right? So I can go ask someone who knows less, they're going to have a stronger opinion.
Yeah,
and this is what makes it exciting, because if you knew the answer to everything, this keeps it, a little mystery to what's going to happen in our future.
Yes, exactly. And so, okay, so I'll just tell you, here's how I think of time. When I was a kid, I had this really cool dream. Sometimes I have these pivotal dreams that sort of explain things to me scientifically. And this one was really cool. And I was like, I don't know, 12? I don't know, something like that. And I was worried about the Cold War because it was the 80s, and I was kind of a paranoid kid, and I was afraid we were going to have a nuclear war, but then a lot of people were then. And so I had this dream where this room was shown to me, and there was just a chair in the room, and it had a narrator, and the narrator said, look, if you don't want to walk into the chair and you're in a room, the only way you could not walk into the chair is if you know the chair is there, and then you can avoid it. If you don't know it's there, you can't avoid it. And I woke up and I was thinking, if we know about the threat of nuclear war, we can avoid it, But I also thought, the room is time. And that's still how I think about it today, that the purpose of precognition, so I'm going to get to mechanism by talking about purpose. The purpose of precognition, I think, is to, in important situations, to let us know that there's something that we can actually, we have a choice. And sometimes it's to let us know we don't have a choice, and that's where this gets confusing. But anyway, to let us know that something's coming, let's say, regardless of whether we have a choice or not.
Before you keep going, you're saying that you believe that there is choice and predestiny, both?
Yeah, so I backed off of that pretty quick because Yeah, because I'm not sure about that. So I just wanted to keep the most simple argument.
Okay.
Once you start talking about free will, then that's a whole another hour. But yeah, let's just keep the most simple case, which is that let's assume precognition is telling you that something's coming up, and we're going to be agnostic right now about whether or not you have choice about what to do, right?
Uh-huh.
But it definitely can prepare you, whether or not you have choice, it can prepare you for a future event, okay? So if that's the purpose of precognition, it also suggests that we have evolved, given the scientific evidence for precognition, that we've evolved in a universe where there is information about future events, and that information is somehow leaked back to us, that normally we don't have access to that information. Most people don't normally have access to that information. So our brains are built in a way to basically not give us that information for some reason. And sometimes that information leaks backward in time anyway in certain circumstances where it's useful. And sometimes we're conscious of it, and sometimes we're not. And so what I think ends up, when you look at the physics of time, where there's really a bunch of physicists are arguing right now, but basically it doesn't look like there's any good reason to decide time should only go in one direction. Most physical mm-hmm. equations are time reversible. It's pretty hard to actually explain why time feels like it goes in one direction using anything in physics. Psychologically, we just say that we have that experience, but physically, it's really hard to explain from first principles. So assuming we're like unidirectional experiencers in time who are living in a bidirectional time universe, so where information is going in both directions in time, let's make that assumption, then the real thing that needs to be explained is not precognition, but how the mind is sorting out how to keep us going in one direction in time and how to periodically give us information that's useful about future events and when to do that. To me, that's the real mystery. So it's almost like the real mystery is, why do we only experience in one direction in time rather than both?
And do you think, is there a training of the mind that is helpful to be able to access this kind of information more clearly?
I do, and I want to be careful about that. So I started falling in love with something that I call controlled precognition, which is sitting down and doing, it's a subset of remote viewing. So do you know about remote viewing?
Yes, but go ahead and define that for our listeners.
Sure. Okay. So remote viewing is kind of a bad name that I don't love because it's not all visual and it's not really remote. It's happening inside of you.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, it's getting information psychically in a conscious, you know, sitting down. There's a technical process for doing it. A lot of people who do it don't even think it's psychic. They just think it's this technical process of getting the information. But certainly they're getting information from a long distance in time and space or space away. Controlled precognition is a subset of remote viewing. So it's a technical process very similar to remote viewing, except the only difference is that the target is always something that no one on the planet knows until after you're done with your session. So you can't use any other kind of cues to get the information. You have to use precognition because no one knows what the target is until the future. So that's what controlled precognition is. And I started learning controlled precognition from John Vivanco, who does transdimensional remote viewing, and he and I became teaching partners, and now we teach it because we're both fascinated by it. But so the reason I want to be careful about that is, for some people, it could really help to sit down and decide, I'm going to consciously put on paper, go through these steps, be able to predict this future event, and it could help them not only sort of psychologically and spiritually, in terms of you get to know your mind and your soul really well because nothing is hidden. It's like shining a flashlight on everything, which, you know, could be rough, right? But it could also be great. So not only is there that aspect, but it could also be helpful in terms of the world, right? So in the book, in Premonition Code, we talk about creating a positive precog movement. So people who are training themselves in controlled precognition to actually help the world be a better place and help develop people out in the open. And there's a lot of people who are already doing this kind of stuff, but it's considered so taboo and weird and woo-woo that a lot of people don't tell others that they're doing it. And what we're wanting to do is create a movement where people are saying, yeah, it's a normal thing. It's like saying I'm a piano student. You could say I'm a positive precog, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I want to dive into that a little bit more and how positive precogs can help the world and maybe make a shift globally. We've got to take a short break and just play a track of music here. We'll be right back. We're going to play Time Travelers, kind of appropriate. Emily Vey on Conscious Living Radio 100.5 FM in Vancouver.
Time traveler, time traveler.
Co-op Radio 100.5 FM is political.
Co-op Radio is poetry.
Co-op Radio is tango.
Co-op Radio is gay.
Ecology.
Comedy.
Feminism.
Philosophy.
Yoga.
Reggae.
Bicycles.
Trade unions.
Gospel.
Live.
Local.
Asian.
African.
Vancouver Co-op Radio is community.
Your community.
Vancouver Co-op Radio.
CFRO.
100.5 FM.
All different.
All the time.
And we're back. We're speaking with Julia Moss-Bridge, a cognitive neuroscientist, and about the premonition code, the science of precognition, and how sensing the future can change your life. So just before we broke for music, you were talking about positive precogs, someone who uses controlled precognition and can help the world doing that. So how exactly could that work?
Yeah, right. Let's make that happen somehow.
Okay.
Sort of my idea about how it could work, and this is just an idea, but of course other people might have better ideas, right? Is that first step is to, and that's the point of the book, is to get some awareness of the science behind precognition so it can come out of the shadows. So many people have precognitive experiences and feel like it's weird or unusual, and it's really not. It's just a common human experience. It's like saying musical ability is unusual. It's not, but you can develop it, right? And then the next step is to develop it in people and help them, give them tools to do that. And that's the point of the website, is to provide a training opportunity for precognition. And then the third step is to create groups around the world of people who, maybe they're meetups, maybe they're, you know, small-scale organizations, maybe they're large-scale organizations that have the purpose of using their abilities to solve local problems and maybe more global problems. And then I would like to move towards something like a positive precog council or a positive precog aspect of sort of a global organization like the UN or something that could use, in addition to artificial intelligence and all the information we already have about potential future threats to humanity or changes that need to be made, let's just say that in a less depressing way, let's add to it precognition. There's a guy, Stephen Schwartz, who's just done great work in this called the 2050 Project, where he takes excellent precogs and he asks them over time, look at 2050, show me what you see in all these aspects, you know, economic, social, global, war, famine, blah, blah. And then he looks at the commonalities across what they see. And it's very interesting what he's finding. And
What is he finding? Tell us.
Oh, sure. So actually, he started this back in the 80s. And he had people look, I think, at 2010 or I forget what year it was, but some year that's already passed. And they saw things like they saw HIV happen before it happened. They saw the polarization of the politics in the United States. They saw that the world was not destroyed by nuclear war, which was a shock given how everyone was concerned, like I was in the 80s, about that. They saw... and then for this period of time that we're in right now, in the next 10 years, I think they saw a new form of energy, an alternative energy source that would make a lot of governmental conflicts between countries completely obsolete. But then it was that would shift the way people thought about power and relationships and kind of cause its own kind of chaos. So, yeah, that's the kind of stuff that they're finding. And it's super fascinating. And, of course, it's one of these things where you can't validate it until Stephen Schwartz himself is probably not going to be alive. But his past results, he's also used the same method to go find a bunch of archaeological artifacts. It's worked really well. So he's had some good past results with these folks.
So let's say this really takes off and we become a society of people who have trained themselves to be precognitive. Are there any ethical or moral considerations that might arise that you can foresee?
Yeah, and that's part of what we were stressing in the book is there's, we call them the REACH principles, which is a set of principles that we hope people use when they're pursuing precognition. REACH is just a mnemonic. It stands for respect for the unknown. R-E, I'm just going through my head. What is E? I know that, oh God, it's been a while. Anyway, sorry, they all stand for things, and right now I'm blanking on them, and I apologize. I'll go to my own website, and I'll tell you in a second. But we have those principles, and we also have a list of ethics, because there could be real problems when people actually have the experience of actually getting it that they could see into the future events, not just in some sort of vague way, but in a fairly exact way. And you could start to get delusional on the one end. On the other end, you could start to feel helpless if you're thinking you don't have free will.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a narrow road to walk that's important. Okay, I've got my reach principles here. So respect for the unknown, ethics in our use of precognition, and then we have a whole list of ethics, accuracy of our precognitive skills. So that's just pursuing getting better, compassion for ourselves and others, and honesty in all our dealings. So one of the ethical problems that people can come across is, especially in this time right now that we're in, where not everyone understands the limits of precognition. So you have the scientists on the one side who say, oh, it's all bunk. Not all scientists, obviously. I'm a scientist. I don't say that. But many scientists say that because they're not familiar with the research. And then you have another group of people who don't know necessarily about the scientific element, but they say, yes, it's really important. I use it all the time, and I always trust it. But the deal is that precognition, like every other skill, is never 100% correct. And so we're in this time where people need to get educated about precognition is like any other human skill. You need to practice it. It needs you need to acknowledge when you're using it, if you're working with a client, that you're not 100% correct and no one is. You need to be clear with a client that whatever you see doesn't mean that it's baked into the mud and it's going to come out of the oven and there's no way to change it. You just need to be very clear that the unethical thing to do is basically say, I'm 100% correct. What I see happens, and, oh, it turns out so-and-so is going to die, and too bad for you. That's scientifically not the way it works, and that's also not compassionate or even accurate.
Well, if we dug into human interactions and how we relate and communicate, it's already confusing, frankly, you know, and now we're going to throw in this superpower because, you know, like when people talk about anything other than themselves, there's no argument. If you're going to talk about you and I talk about me and Mark talks about himself, there's no argument because you're having an experience. I'm having an experience. He's having an experience. We can relax in that. We're listening, right, to each other. But as soon as you start talking about the other person, and what's going to happen? Now we're going to add, what's going to happen? It's enough that just talking about the other person and your perception of them right now, forget about in the future. You know, it's like saying, if you keep doing this, A or B is going to happen. I mean, to me, it's about, I experience it in my body as a boundary cross. And so that to me is the part that's so scary about all this. How, you know, how people will use it in terms of even human relationships.
So I think one of the rules has to be that you don't give people information that you sense unless they're asking for it. And then you develop a boundary around how you're giving that information. You make clear, I'm not 100% correct. These things come to me. Sometimes they're correct and sometimes they're not. I try my best. What I see isn't necessarily set in stone. I think that you have to do that, otherwise it's unethical.
What if the guideline, though, what if the guideline was, when you want me to tell you, I will help you answer it yourself and develop your own ability?
Yeah, maybe, but some people, yeah, that's great, but some people aren't great at it.
At which? At being?
It doesn't matter how much you try to help me. Some people, for whatever reason, it's like if you're tone deaf. You know, good luck taking voice lessons. It's just
so you,
not everyone has every skill, right?
Okay, so you're saying this skill is not a human skill that everyone possesses to the same degree.
And that was my question. Is this something everybody has innately within them and just has to be cultivated?
Yeah. You're saying no.
Oh, okay, right. Let me break it up into two parts. Okay, yes, it's a human skill that everyone has to some degree, and mostly the degree that people have it, at least according to the science, is unconsciously. So, like, without conscious awareness, we have this physiological change that we're not controlling, but that just occurs. Mm-hmm. And that's on average across all people. So that's fairly common, and I think that's something most people, almost everyone has, right? And then what I was talking about, this other ability that you can develop and learn through controlled precognition or other means, you could practice and learn how to develop the skill consciously, where you sit down and you say, okay, I have this task, I'm going to try to figure this out, here it is, you know?
You're going to get answers to current, let's say, global problems or something. Is that what you mean?
Or even just I have a client who comes to me who owns a business and says, in 5 years, do I do better if I partner with this one organization or with this other organization? You know, that's an important question to answer for a business, and so you do your best.
So I love this. Can you do that? Like as an example? So someone comes to you and asks you exactly that. How would you go into a state or begin the process, you yourself, to then give them this kind of information that would be helpful?
I would be unethical if I would do that, because the best thing for me to do, given my skill, which is okay but not amazing, is to go to some people who I work with who have amazing skill. I say to them, okay, I'm going to do this, but I want you to do it too, and I'm going to compare notes, and you're going to, whatever you say is going to go. My skill's good, but it's not great. And so I have a group of people that I go to, a team of people, like if I'm working with missing persons or law enforcement, I'll go to a team of people and say, hey, let's do this. And then you can get a group consensus. So the way it works is, we want to do a little exercise on this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We like exercises.
We have 12 minutes.
Okay. Well, we'll do a quick exercise.
Awesome.
So one of the key things in learning how to do this, in my view, is developing a really positive relationship between what we call the unconscious, which I like, the piece of the unconscious that I work with is called the superconscious, which is some people call the higher self. It's the part that can fly above your life and kind of be a bird and notice, give you guidance based on the whole map, you know?
Yeah, this is my very first question that I asked you, if this was the portal to accessing.
Yeah, see, I thought it might take us a little longer to get there, but you were precognitive. Like, I just wasn't following. I told you I wasn't the best. You're probably better than I am at this stuff, right?
I was thinking of that as a good joke, but...
No, I think it could be true, right? So the higher self is this superconscious piece, this wise piece that has the information, that can get information from the future. And then there's our ego or waking self that has opinions and analysis and all sorts of stuff. And it's not bad. It's not, you know, the ego is sometimes knocked in the world of personal development, but it's also really important to, like, pay your rent and do all sorts of things. And so So the idea is to do something that we call in the book the higher self handshake, which is one of the first ways that I help people get into this state. And usually I'm helping people who are better at this than I am. So I'm a better teacher than I am a doer. And the way I help them get into the state is to do the higher self handshake, which is this agreement between your ego and your higher self that the ego is going to do the things it's good at. And that includes things like keeping on task and writing things down and making sure that, you know, you're not walking out of the room randomly and have forgotten what you're doing. And the higher self is going to do the thing it's good at, which is to go into the future and get information and bring it back. And that both of them are not going to try to do the other one's job. So we get into trouble when the ego tries to do the job of the higher self and says, wait, I know what's going on. It's this and this and this. And then, okay, it's all just wrong, right? Or when the higher self says, oh, forget, I don't need the ego. I'm just going to be floaty out here in the future, and I'll never come back home. And then nothing gets written down, and you haven't really done what you set out to do. So let's do an exercise called the higher self handshake. So go ahead and, everyone out there in the world, if you're driving, you're not going to do the part where you close your eyes.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
You can pull over, though. Yeah. You've got a minute now to pull over. We're going to close our eyes for a bit.
Okay, so those of you who can, close your eyes and get in those seated position. And imagine that you're sitting, what you're going to do is first we'll ground ourselves. So imagine you're sitting in the crux of a tree, like right where the trunk comes up and the branches are coming off. And it's really a solid tree with a wide diameter, so it just is going to hold you just beautifully. And it connects you to the center of the earth. This tree has its roots in the center of the earth. So through this trunk of this tree, you are connected to the center of the earth. And feel that. And then above your head, feel a beautiful sphere of light. Like, let's call it glitter light, because it glitters like gold and it's sparkly like gold. And it comes into you And the great thing about it coming into you is it's exactly designed for your energy. So this is almost, I tell people to put their name on this little globe of golden light, because it's only for you and it's not for anyone else you know. Even if you tried to heal someone else with this light, it wouldn't work. It's just for your energy system. So it's not selfish just to take it into you, because you're the only one who can benefit from it. So let it come down into your body and into the area around your body, whether you call that the aura or the light body or whatever. Let that come down and fill you up, and it feels like unconditional love. It feels really good. And then go ahead and put your attention in between your ears at the center of your head, not in your forehead area. That's where your analyzer is. That's where your analysis and ego likes to sit. But in the center of your head, between your ears in that neutral space, that's where your attention is. Some people, when they get there, feel like, whoa, this is kind of busy. I need to clean it out. So take a moment, if you haven't cleaned it out in a while, just to clean it out. Fill it with that nice golden light. And then what we'll do is we'll right now be in the center of our heads, and we'll be our egos. We'll be our analyzer, the part that, hey, it's an important part, gets things done, has opinions. And we're going to concentrate on being that, whereas in front of us, in the center of our head, we'll see an image of our higher self. So look at that. What does that look like? What does that feel like? What does it sound like? Is it a person or an animal or a ray of light or a rainbow or whatever it is? Let that be what it is and just notice it. And then when you're ready, go ahead and listen as your ego. Listen, what is the higher self saying to you that it needs to work with you in a fruitful, collaborative relationship? What does it need from you, the ego? So listen to that. You don't have to say yes. You don't have to have any opinion about it, although you might. But just listen to what it needs. And if you want to, you can say, yes, I'll give that to you. And if you don't, that's fine. And then when you're ready. Oh, by the way, when I say listen to what it needs, it could also be visual, but it could also be giving you a visual request or any other kind of request. Sense what it needs would be more accurate. And when you're ready, go ahead and switch. And now you'll be your higher self, and you'll embody that wise, older sibling part of yourself that knows what's going on and can guide you. And you'll still be in the center of your head, and in front of you, you can see your ego. And it needs something too. So just take a gander at it. What is it like? What does it feel like, look like, sound like? Maybe it smells, I don't know. And then listen or look and find out what it's requesting from you. It might need something from you, the higher self, to do its work with you. So what is that? And again, you don't have to say yes. Just go ahead and listen. And if you want to say yes, you can. But it's enough just to be present and hear and watch. Because you're starting the relationship, or you're continuing the relationship and enriching the relationship so you can work together. And finally, when you're ready, go ahead and put your hand out, either physically or mentally, put your hand out and shake and agree that you'll be in collaboration. And it's really okay for both of you to do the jobs that you're really good at, and for each of you to let the other one do their job. And then that's it. And then come back. And so that kind of state, getting in the state where you recognize everyone has a job to do and it's really okay for those jobs to get done, and now we're going to get down to business and each of us do what our business is, that's the state that I think works best for this kind of work. So I would ask the people on my team, to get into that state and then start the controlled precognition process, which we spend a whole chapter on in the book, and it's too much to outline here, but it's on the website and mm-hmm. it's for free. You can go through it at thepremonitioncode.com.
Yeah, I was going to say a little bit more about your website, because we only have 2 minutes or so before we have to wrap. Yeah, you have an experiment on there, or a global something that
I will. Yeah, sure. I'll say that really quickly. But also before that, what was your experience with the exercise we just did?
Mine was the same. They both wanted the same thing. I had some resistance because choosing to identify as my ego, I've spent so many years dissolving. And it's not that I don't appreciate the job my ego's done. I'm okay with that. I'm not trying to kill it anymore. I've made friends with it ages ago, but I don't let it lead. And so my practice, in my daily practice, is always to tap into that higher part of me and let it be my guide or my leader. So it was really strange at the beginning to be the ego, and by choice, right? But they both needed the same thing, which was really cool. I kind of like that. I go, okay, that's cool.
Are you going to tell us what they needed, Tasha?
Sure.
What is it?
Sure. My ego was represented as a piece of, it was like lava. It was quite hard and crusty on the outside. Oh. And my higher self had so much flow. It was this incredible garment, but it had tons of strands and flow and flow and flow. And that's the word, flow. More flow, water, softer flow. And both needed the same thing from each other as well as inside themselves,
everyone needed energy. Flow?
Yep.
That's awesome.
Beautiful.
Yeah, that's the, cool.
Yeah.
Well, mine was similar too. It was just really my, you know, it was about letting go and trusting is really what it was.
Yeah.
You know, letting go even more and trusting even more, even though I like to think I let go. I know I still hang on to stuff. And every now and again, I'm still human. And then the other side of that coin is the trust. As much as I trust and have faith, there's times that it's like, come on, universe, where are you?
Yep.
So it's trusting more.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
I love it.
Okay, the website, the scientific experiment on your website.
Yes. So if you go to thepremonitioncode.com and if you click on positive precog training, it takes you to an enriched version of a training website where there's training videos and articles, and also you could train yourself for free once you register, which is free, and it takes you through the 6 steps of controlled precognition, and there's information about, I guess it's on the events page on the main site where there's information about classes and workshops, and But I certainly spent a lot of time designing the training part of the website so that it was scientifically valid. So it's a very difficult task that I've created. I mean, I'm asking people to predict the future when a random number generator is in charge of it.
Mm-hmm.
And some people are getting to be good at it.
Do you get to see your own results?
Oh, yeah. Oh, it shows you your statistics and everything, which can be cool. It can be discouraging. The important thing about it is to keep learning. And so the people who are most interested in it end up joining this Telegram forum where we talk about ways to polish your skills. But getting discouraged is part of the deal. Like once there's something that you can be wrong at, mm-hmm. there's going to be times where you're wrong. And dealing with that psychologically is part of the practice.
Only for the ego is it a problem.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
The higher self goes, oh, roll with it, baby, roll with it. Keep on going.
Yes, that's correct.
Well, Julia, it's been wonderful having you on the show. Thanks for joining us. All of this information will be up on our website as well, consciouslivingradio.org, and as well as the show to be listened to again if you like. And any events that you want our listeners to know about that you're facilitating?
Sure, and I also want to say thanks to you both for tolerating my confusion at the beginning. You jumped into the future, and I'm not used to people jumping into the future.
Yeah,
no problem. We have 30 seconds.
Okay, great. You can go to thepremonitioncode.com/events. I'm doing a Conscious Living Expo in L.A. I'm doing a thing in the Bahamas for 4 days or something. I'm doing a thing at 1440 Multiversity for 3 days. So there's a bunch of different kinds of things. Plus, I've got a class coming up online that's called Controlled Precognition 101 that you can check out. That's all on thepremonitioncode.com/events.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us, Julia.
Thanks so much.
You've been listening to Conscious Living Radio. This is my favorite track that I have a whole story about, and Mark was brilliant to find online because I messed up bringing it on my phone that is a new phone and requires a new adapter.
Thank me after it plays.
Okay. This is the Alan Parsons Project, Time, on Conscious Living Radio, Co-op Radio in Vancouver.